death comes for us all. But although we accept this fact, we try not to think about it, even subconsciously pretending as though it isn't there. All things come to an end, and human existence is no different. Many of us will be hit with deadly illness in our time, and it is within our nature to fight back, most successfully happening through scientific understanding that improves yearly. However, no matter how hard we try, we will never win the fight against mortality. Death has many approaches. It can come slowly, creeping over your body as you get your affairs in order. Or it can come fast, spending your day unaware that you will never live to see another. To be consistently aware of this would be no way to live. Yet at the same time, it is good to acknowledge that we never truly know what is around the corner of each passing moment. There are so many ways to die, and even more variables that can lead up to it. But then again, there are also the cases of death that seem to baffle those around it. And on those odd occasions, it is no wonder that so many question if there are more ways to die than we are even currently aware of. My name is Luke Mordew, and this urban legend is spontaneous human combustion. Fire is an incredible element. It is both elegant and manic, beautiful and horrifying. The discovery of how to control fire was a massive step in human progress, as this once ferocious chemical reaction was now a giver of light in the dark and warmth in the cold. Until fairly recently in humans' existence, fire was one of the most essential things in our world. With fire and water both sitting on opposite ends of the spectrum. Two things needed to survive, but both able to kill you with such ease. To burn alive would be a pain that none of us want to experience. Even the sensation of a burnt fingertip from a second on a stove is enough to cause significant discomfort and pain, often involving noticeable, albeit temporary, damage to our skin. Most of us have seen the effects of fire on a human body through some form of media, and its horrors are widely understood, whether you were to survive or not. There are things we can put in place to protect ourselves from this. We put guards around fireplaces, don't leave plugs turned on when away, and blow out our candles before bed. On most occasions of a fire, people are lucky enough to spot the signs early, as they are often hard to miss. But what if there was no time for this? What if the fire blasted suddenly and seemingly without warning? What if that flame had seemingly come from inside of you? In my telling of a fictionalized event of human spontaneous combustion, we will follow Amber, who has just got home from a terrible night at work. Amber sat in her car, parked in the driveway of her mum's house. She was only 24, but she was already feeling the pressure to move out, especially with how tight things had been for her and her mum lately. She studied her face in the rearview mirror, adjusting her hair that was sitting disheveled and scruffy on her head. She patted her cheeks with her hands and took a deep breath, gearing herself up to go inside and share the news before opening the car door, which caused the light to emit in a horrible off-white. She was still wearing her name badge that was now glistening in the glow. Without a thought, she quickly pinged it off her top, feeling frustrated by the very sight of it. She was supposed to return it before she left, but she didn't care. It's not like they were going to come after her for it, and she was never going back. She gripped it tightly in her hand as she stepped out of the car, slamming the door behind her, pacing to the house. As she passed the plastic bins by the bushes, she lifted one's lid, tossing the badge inside before it slammed shut. When she stepped into the house, her mother, Marjorie, was sat at the kitchen table drinking a cheap bottle of wine and smoking a cigarette, fighting against a vicious-sounding cough. The smell of her habit was strong and thick, which instantly caused Amber to frown. She resented how much the house now smelt of smoke. Way back when, she wouldn't dream of smoking inside the house, but lately, with the stress of life, it had seemed her standards had dropped, and the need to keep things nice had faded. Marjorie peered her head around the kitchen door, watching Amber curiously as she entered the house, exclaiming that she was home earlier than expected. Amber sighed, knowing that this sentence was indeed more of a question than a statement. "Yeah, there was an issue at work," Amber replied, trying to sound as casual as possible as she kicked off her shoes. Her mum asked her if she could please come into the kitchen, but Amber knew that this request was actually a demand. She wasn't even sure why she was feeling so anxious about sharing what had happened. She didn't regret what she did, and she would probably do it again without guilt under the same circumstances. It was just that it was such a strange situation that she wasn't sure how her mum was going to react to it. Amber arrived in the kitchen doorway as Marjorie put out her cigarette into the glass ashtray on the table, her eyes remaining fixated on Amber as she arrived. "Are you skiving?" she asked firmly, causing Amber to snigger under her breath as she looked back into the hallway, as if preparing to escape. "No, I'm not skiving. I was sent home." "Why?" Marjorie sharply asked, barely giving Amber a chance to finish her last words before stepping in. Amber took a breath and nodded her head, as if subconsciously telling herself it was okay as she spoke. "There was a guy being creepy in the restaurant. He made a couple of comments to me. I tried to ignore it, but then he got annoyed." "So what did you do?" Marjorie impatiently asked, with a tone that sounded more accusational than concerned, at least to Amber. She ignored this and responded through gritted teeth, still ensuring to look anywhere else but at her mum. "He grabbed me by my wrist, so I slapped him." "In the face?" Marjorie asked in shock, already grabbing her glass of wine to take another swig. By now, Amber had grown defensive. Marjorie hadn't shown too much emotion one way or the other just yet, but from Amber's point of view, this was all very much leaning in the direction of this being her own fault, and this thought had infuriated her. Marjorie began her next sentence, but before it could come out fully, she had begun to cough again, this time with horrendous force, as if her body was rejecting her lungs. Even so, she had gotten enough words out for Amber to understand that what she was really asking was, had she been fired? "Yeah, I was let go," Amber replied firmly as Marjorie downed her wine to alleviate her cough. "I should sue, really. I experience sexual harassment and I'm the one who gets fired." By now, Marjorie's coughing had calmed. She got to her feet, shaking her head in disbelief, still holding the glass of wine in her hand. She pulled the bottle towards her and began to refill her glass, now with her back to Amber. "You hit somebody at work, of course you were fired." She said this with a sort of growl, partly due to the soreness of her throat and partly due to the anger that was building up inside of her. "Mum, the guy grabbed me," Amber defiantly exclaimed. "Yeah? That's not sexual harassment," Marjorie snapped back before finally turning to face her, now leaning against the kitchen worktop. Amber was infuriated by this remark, staring back at Marjorie, who was now rubbing her chest, tending to a probable heartburn that she'd inflicted onto herself. To Amber, she had just told her mum that a man had grabbed her in anger and had been fired for standing her ground. However, to Marjorie, her daughter had just told her that she had lost yet another job due to her acting on impulse without any regard for the bigger picture. She began to explain to Amber that they would eventually lose the house if she did not begin to contribute more towards it. It wasn't like Amber was unaware of this. She often wished that she could win the lottery to fix their problems. But at this moment in time, all she was hearing was her mum shouting at her over financial burdens when she should instead be comforting her daughter. This quickly led to both parties screaming at each other. Neither were there to understand the other, and nobody was backing down against what they had felt in their first knee-jerk reaction. Marjorie had begun coughing again, as if raising her voice had strained her body somehow. Amber took this as an opportunity to speak freely, now calming her tone as she tried to explain to her mum that women shouldn't just allow men to grab at them when they want their attention. She wanted to tell her that the man would never have done this to another man. She wanted to remind her that she stands up for herself because of how Marjorie had raised her. But unfortunately, this potential calmer approach had been quickly disturbed by Marjorie's coughing that was now looking painful and troubling. "Mum, are you okay?" Amber asked, stepping forward, causing Marjorie to instinctually step away, waving her hand in front of her as if to say, "Don't." But before she could even place her hand back beside her waist, a flicker of blue flame had appeared in Marjorie's hand, as if she had just coughed it up. This seemed to shock them both, but there was no chance to register it any further, as bright orange flames had suddenly erupted over her entire body, burning from the inside out. It was as if every pore of her body was experiencing a gas leak, causing the flames to wrap around her in violent light. Amber screamed, jumping back in horror. Marjorie, on the other hand, remained still, as if completely paralyzed, now just standing in her kitchen as a statue of fire. Amber would attempt to put out the flames, but there was nothing that could seemingly be done. No amount of water did anything to stop it. She had called out to her mum several times, but she wouldn't show any indication of a reaction, as if the flames had not only taken control of her body, but her mind too. By the time the fire department, police, and ambulances arrived at the scene, Amber was sitting at the front door, her hands and arms covered in burns. The police would ask her what had happened, but she had no idea what to tell them. How was any of this possible? They would eventually step inside to find the charred body that now rested on the floor, now almost nothing but ash, with only certain parts of the corpse intact, still glowing a slight red under the now blackened skin. That was, apart from Marjorie's feet, which was still completely intact, on the floor beside her, seemingly untouched by the fire. They would also notice that the walls had a slight shine to them, covered in a thin layer of a film-like substance. It was as if the room had been filled with condensation, only with some form of oil. Outside, the paramedics would tend to Amber's hands and arms, keeping her calm and ensuring that she was safe while still at the scene. They would ask her questions and share comforting words to try and alleviate some of her pain. However, none of this was sinking in. Her mind was elsewhere, still focused on the flickering flames that now burnt into her brain. It would seem that regardless of her mum's cigarettes indoors, the smell of smoke would haunt this house for years to come.
Thank you.
Spontaneous combustion is, without doubt, a very real thing. It occurs when a substance with a low ignition temperature, such as hay or straw, begins to warm. This could occur due to several factors, whether that be oxidation or bacterial fermentation, both of which are known to create heat. This heat at times can struggle to escape as, perhaps surprisingly, hay, straw, and other things like it are very good insulators, which can cause this heat to eventually rise. Once this temperature surpasses its ignition point, combustion can and will occur if mixed with the right amount of oxygen. This is a known and studied phenomenon that is scientifically sound and clear. However, when we delve into the stories of human beings similarly bursting into flames, things become a little bit more confusing and far more curious. In its most unambiguous terms, spontaneous human combustion is a cause of death attributed to a fire originated without any apparent external sources of ignition, with the fire itself beginning from within the body of the victim. This has been a curiosity amongst many for hundreds of years now, with the idea first appearing in writing in 1663, when Danish anatomist Thomas Bartholin described how a woman in Paris went up in ashes and smoke whilst she was sleeping. Curiously, the straw mattress on which she slept was reportedly unmarred by this fire. A few years later, a Frenchman named Jonas Dupont published a collection of spontaneous human combustion cases in his work, De Incendis Corporis Humani Spontanei. Nearly 100 years later, in 1746, a fellow of the Royal Society, Paul Raleigh, published an article in the Philosophical Transactions concerning the mysterious death of Countess Cornelia Zangari Bandy. On June 4, 1938, the British Medical Journal published an article by L.A. Parry, who cited a 1923 published book by the name of Medical Jurisprudence. In this book, similarities were drawn between recorded cases of spontaneous human combustion, with many consistent characteristics being that the victims were often alcoholics, that they were usually elderly and female, that their feet and hands typically fall off, and that the fire causes very little damage to things in contact with the body, even those considered combustible. It added that a combusted body will also leave a greasy ash residue with a very offensive odor. Only a week or so later, on June the 18th, a coroner named Gavin Thurston would describe the phenomenon as having apparently attracted the attention not only of the medical profession, but of the laity 100 years ago in the British Medical Journal. However, the 100 years prior account he referred to was a fictional account published in 1834 in the Frederick Meyerat cycle. Around this time, people would often talk of alcohol addiction alongside the events of spontaneous human combustion. However, it becomes clear as to why when we see that the typical working theory amongst physicians and writers was that alcohol abuse was the cause of the combustion to occur. It would even rear its head in mainstream audiences in 1852 with the publication of Charles Dickens' Bleak House. In the story, a junk merchant with a drinking problem named Mr. Crook ends up as nothing but a heap of ash on the floor, with descriptions of dark, greasy coatings on the walls and ceilings. Later, when the story was released in a book edition outside of a serial form, Charles Dickens even wrote a defense for his usage of spontaneous human combustion, fighting back against the accusations of implausibility he had first received. To do this, he cited numerous famous cases and named several medical doctors who confirmed that such a thing was within the realms of reality. It had now been hundreds of years since its first mention, yet it remained a puzzling curiosity in the world, with many debating its cause, reasons, and authenticity. This would not go away anytime soon, of course, and after passing another 100 years, the theories have continued. Many were curious as to how a body could burn away so suddenly and so precisely. They also pondered on just how a body's hands and feet were seemingly always unburnt, at least compared to the rest of the charred corpses found. That's not to mention the greasy residue on the furniture and walls alongside the body. This phenomenon has been attributed to so many things in life. Centuries ago, it was considered a sign of God's wrath or ill health. In the 1970s, there was even talk of it being the result of a person's depressive emotional state. Others have suggested things far and wide, from sunspots to cosmic storms causing a chemical reaction, whilst some have even claimed it happens due to an overwhelming buildup of vibrational energy within a person. There have been reported cases of people's skin suddenly showing signs of burns, occasionally even blistering as if heated up from the inside. This has caused speculation that perhaps these individuals had become dangerously close to a sudden burst of spontaneous human combustion. Some have even claimed that they had, in fact, burst into flames suddenly, but had luckily managed to stop it before it claimed them in full, allowing them to live to tell the tale. Sometimes with urban legends, it turns out that much of the story was exaggerated or embellished to a point where it's no longer recognizable. Other times, it turns out that there was no foundation to begin with, and the tale itself is nothing but a folkloric story that has spread and stuck to numerous cultures. However, on rare occasions, there is a significant basis or fact behind the narrative at play. And it would seem that the idea of spontaneous human combustion is one of them. It was the Christmas Eve of 1885 in the small farming town of Seneca, Illinois, that it is claimed that a woman named Matilda Rooney had suddenly burst into flames as she stood in her kitchen. It was widely understood that the fire had utterly incinerated her body, with only her feet found intact on the floor. Unfortunately, although the fire hadn't spread further, it had also claimed the life of her husband, Patrick Rooney, who died of suffocation in the next room. Investigators at the time found the sight a confusing and strange thing to see. They could see no sign of trouble or anything to indicate that this was an attack. The Rooneys had been having a lovely evening drinking whiskey together, and nobody who had seen them around had spotted anything unusual. It was also noted that there was nothing around her that could have potentially ignited the flames, and that the fire itself seemed completely isolated to her body, causing minimal to no damage to anything around her. A few decades later, in 1938, Maybelle Andrews was enjoying a party with her fiancé and friends. As she stood at the top of the stairs, it is claimed that a sudden flame erupted from her body to the shock of many around her. 13 years later, in the July of 1951, a landlady noticed that her house's doorknob was unusually hot, suggesting that a fire was burning inside. She quickly contacted the police, but when they finally entered the property, they found nothing but the ashes of what was once the 67-year-old woman named Mary Risa. The chair she was sitting on as she died was also destroyed, although everything else in the room was untouched and undamaged. Alongside the charred ashes of Mary was a single leg that rested still intact by the remains. Everything about this case showed the unusual signs of spontaneous human combustion. However, the official explanation after an investigation by the FBI was that she had fallen asleep while smoking a cigarette, dropping it onto her lap and causing her to burn. This was correlated with the fact that Mary was taking sleeping pills at the time. Dr. John Irvin Bentley is one of the more well-known and widely discussed victims of apparent spontaneous human combustion. He was last seen alive on the 4th of December, 1966, when his friends said their goodbye that evening in Pennsylvania. It was only the following morning that Don Gosnell, a meter reader, let himself into the house with previous permission due to John's infirmity, as he was now 92 years old. Whilst Don was down in the basement, he noticed a strange smell alongside faint smoke. He later explained that the smoke was somewhat sweet, like starting up a new oil-burning central heating system. He would state that he found a neat pile of ash around 35 centimeters in height on the ground. However, the floor below it was unmarked, but above his head was a foot-long square hole in the floorboard. He went back upstairs to find out what was going on, entering the thicker smoke that now misted around him. And it was here that he would find Dr. John Irvin Bentley's cremated remains. Once again, all that was found was the lower half of his right leg, his slipper still on his foot, whilst everything else around him was seemingly unbothered. 4 years later, in 1970, an 89-year-old woman named Margaret Hogan was home alone in Dublin, Ireland. It was on the 28th of March that she was found dead. She had almost been burnt away completely, leaving little left behind. The television screen had melted, and the plastic flowers in the middle of the room had been reduced to liquid. However, as we have seen before, her legs and feet below her knees were intact beside the ash. It had been pointed out that a coal fire was burning when the neighbours left the house the previous day, although no connection between that fire and the fire that eventually killed Margaret was ever made. 10 years after this, in 1980, a man named Henry Thomas, who was 73 years old at the time, was found burnt and deceased in the living room of his council house in South Wales. The fire had destroyed his corpse entirely, leaving nothing but his skull and one leg that once again remained intact below the knee, even with his socks and trousers still in place. 2 years later, on the 15th of September 1982, a 61-year-old woman named Jeannie Saffin sat at the kitchen table in North London with her father, Jack Saffin, and her brother-in-law, Don Carroll. Jeannie was born with birth defects that had caused intellectual disabilities, limiting her cognitive function to a childlike level, which made her more vulnerable than others her age. Her father, Jack, was reportedly looking away from her the moment she was set on fire. But as he turned, he found his daughter covered in flames. He and Don would use water from the taps to put out the fire as quickly as they could before calling an ambulance. But she died 8 days later from bronchopneumonia brought on by her burns. This has become one of the more famous cases of spontaneous human combustion, as on this occasion, there were witnesses, with Don even claiming to have seen a blue flame suddenly shoot from her stomach. The coroner dismissed the notion of spontaneous human combustion, claiming that there was no such thing. However, Don would go on to state, "The kitchen wasn't damaged, but her cardigan melted. The inquest never sorted it out, but I know what I saw." Many years after this, a man named Michael Fahaty, who was 76 years old in 2010, had his cause of death officially recorded as spontaneous combustion by the coroner. It was in Galway, Ireland, that Dr. Kieran McLaughlin made the following statement. This fire was thoroughly investigated, and I'm left with the conclusion that this fits into the category of spontaneous human combustion, for which there is no adequate explanation. There are numerous recorded incidents regarding apparent spontaneous human combustion, with over 200 cited reports spanning over 300 years. The tales are horrifying and the imagery they create are gruesome. But alongside that is a great deal of mystery and curiosity. It is a fascinating and confusing situation that cannot be explained in any way that doesn't sound at least a little ridiculous. Even so, there is no doubt that these events have and will continue to happen. There are undeniable factors at play here that are easy to see. Victims of spontaneous human combustion are commonly either elderly or living with a disability. Often they are smokers, and a notable amount of them are also intoxicated at the time of death. So what truly is happening here? The answers may not be as straightforward as we expect.
I hope you're enjoying this chapter so far, and we will return to it. But first, I wanted to steal you away for a moment. I love what I do, and delving into the history of urban legends and folklore is as fascinating as it is rewarding. I feel fortunate to have thousands of people listening to my research each week. The kind messages I receive are both heartwarming and reassuring. However, it takes a very long time to create each chapter. And no matter how much I enjoy it, doing this for free is not always a possibility, leading to significant gaps between seasons, gaps that I hope to shorten in the future. And this is where your support is needed. Through Patreon, you can subscribe for as little as £3 a month, less than a latte at your local barista. By doing so, you will receive all episodes without any advertisements or breaks. You will also be able to listen to each chapter the Friday before the general public. On top of this, you'll receive a weekly newsletter and discounts on merchandise. We're not just building a community there, but forging a fellowship of folklore enthusiasts. Join our private group chats, where you can share your stories, theories, and discoveries with like-minded individuals captivated by modern myths. Let's discover what you've heard, what you may want to hear, or what you think of any specific legend. Your support on Patreon isn't just a subscription. It's an investment in preserving our urban legend show. Please help us continue our journey, and in return, become part of our team. Visit our Patreon page by clicking the link in our show notes, clicking subscribe, and paying whatever you can afford to give. I look forward to your support as we continue to unravel folklore together. And now, back to the legend.
Several potential scientific explanations have been put forward with different ranges of plausibility and provability. One widespread belief is that the fire is caused by static electricity that is built up inside of the body. Another idea is that the initial ignition could be sparked when the methane our gut bacteria produces builds up too much in our intestines, eventually becoming ignited by enzymes. However, it has also been pointed out that cows create significantly higher amounts of methane than humans, and there have been no such events with them. Larry E. Arnold, a self-proclaimed expert on spontaneous human combustion, proposed a startling new idea, that a new subatomic particle, which he named pyrotron, was the culprit. This is considered a classic example of pseudoscience, and there is very little to back up these claims. Even so, he would add that the human body's flammability could be increasing due to certain circumstances, such as increased levels of alcohol in the blood. He would also propose that extreme stress could be the trigger behind spontaneous human combustion. In 1975, Michael Harrison published Fire from Heaven, where he suggested that spontaneous human combustion was, in fact, connected to poltergeist activity. He justified this idea by stating that the force which activates the poltergeist originates in and is supplied by a human being. He would even write in his concluding summary that spontaneous human combustion, fatal or non-fatal, belongs to the extensive range of poltergeist phenomena. In 1984, science investigator Joe Nickel and forensic analyst John F. Fisher embarked on an extensive 2-year research project. They would dive into 30 historical cases of alleged spontaneous human combustion. Eventually, their 2-part report was published in the International Association of Arson Investigators Journal as part of a book. Their investigation, which looked deeper into several cases throughout the 18th, 19th, and 20th centuries, found the victims were always close to plausible sources for the ignition, with the charred bodies sitting beside either candles, gas lamps, or fireplaces. Interestingly, the investigation also found that these nearby potential sources were often conveniently omitted from the published accounts of the incidents. They also noted the apparent consistency to which the victims were intoxicated, suggesting that rather than the alcohol level in their blood causing the ignition, it was more than likely an explanation as to the carelessness that could result in such an event. When put like this, it seems a far more plausible conclusion than human beings suddenly bursting into flames. But then comes the question, why did they not get up? Why did it seem to engulf the victim so suddenly? And most importantly, why did the fire not spread beyond the body? Firstly, all it would take is for someone to pass out drunk on their chair by an open fire, accidentally lighting their clothes, a blanket, or something else. Alternatively, it would only take a lit cigarette to drop into their lap once they dozed off, an event we know has caused fires worldwide for many years. We've all witnessed somebody so drunk that they can barely lift their head. And with that in mind, is it so hard to believe that by the time they became aware of the fire, it was too late? Frankly, there are many natural explanations available for such an event. For example, someone having a heart attack could quickly drop a cigarette or fling a blanket too close to a fire. There's also a significant case of obesity, with less available movement and more fat to burn away. There is also the fact that many of the apparent cases of spontaneous human combustion are almost always elderly or in poor health, adding more significant reasons as to why the person was not able to jump into action quickly. There is also the chance that the victims had already died in their sleep, leaving their body to catch fire. All of that makes sense. Someone being so drunk they accidentally set fire to something in their house and die in their sleep. It's not a new idea, and it is something that does happen far too often. Alcohol is a dangerous drug if misused. There are millions of people in vulnerable states, whether it be disability, age, health, or even self-inflicted acts such as an abuse of drugs and alcohol. With this in mind, the whole thing becomes far more realistic. However, that does not do enough to shut down the queries about what is happening, as, arguably, the most curious part about spontaneous human combustion is just how isolated the fire seems to be. How can a body sit burning alone without causing damage to the room around them? Several factors can come into play here. With chair stuffing, floor coverings, blankets and clothing all ablaze, melting the body's fats inside the now dead victim. This would only encourage the flames, causing the burning to continue for longer, thus resulting in more of the body to burn, only to yield more liquefied fat. This would continue as the flames engulf the body as a candle would, with its burning fat acting as a wax alternative. This rare but fascinating phenomenon is known as the wick effect. Several of the hypotheses put forward for the believers of spontaneous human combustion have been looked into, and the conclusion always comes back to how implausible it is for ignition to occur without an external source. Benjamin Radford, scientific paranormal investigator and deputy editor of the science magazine Skeptical Inquirer, stated back in 1987 that if spontaneous human combustion is a natural phenomenon and not the result of an elderly or infirmed person being too close to a flame source, why doesn't it happen more often? There are 5 billion people worldwide at the time of writing, yet we don't see reports of people bursting into flame while walking down the street, attending football games, or sipping a coffee at a local Starbucks. It is worth noting that the wick effect is still very much in its theoretical phase. However, out of all the hypotheses put forward, it is both the most plausible and the most provable. It would only take a small external flame source to char the clothing on a victim before eventually splitting the skin and releasing subcutaneous fat, which is then absorbed by the fabric of the dress, creating a wick-like effect. This combustion, like any candle, will continue for as long as there is fuel to burn, and the human body often has enough fat and other chemical stores to combust a body in full. There is, of course, also a lot of water in the human body, which could be an issue. But if the body were to burn away during the wick effect process slowly, it would give the water time to evaporate away. The fat burning would also account for why hands and feet are so often left behind, as they hold such little fat, making them very difficult to burn in the wick effect state. As for the greasy residue found at the scenes of this phenomenon, this is most likely the residue of the victim's fatty tissue that was burning in the fire. This hypothesis, although not deeply looked into, is widely accepted as the likely cause of what is happening here and has been tested on pig tissue to test its legitimacy. It was in a 1998 television experiment televised on the BBC that forensic scientist John DeHaan wrapped a pig corpse in a blanket before igniting the garment with petrol. During this study, the pig's body fat had indeed liquefied, adding more fuel to the fire. Once a couple of hours had passed, John put out the slow but intense fire and found that much of the pig's flesh and bones had now become nothing but ash, whilst the rest of the room received minimal to no damage. On top of this, the pig's feet remained intact, just as we have seen with our human cases. It is worth noting that none of this is solid proof that spontaneous human combustion does not exist, and it is yet to be completely shut down. That being said, something that is often forgotten is that the burden of proof does not lay at the feet of the non-believer, but at the feet of the believers themselves. And currently, there is no evidence to suggest that spontaneous human combustion is a real thing that can occur. The fact of the matter is that with 7 billion people in the world, with surveillance on most streets and little cameras consistently in our pockets, nobody has ever shown evidence of somebody suddenly bursting into flames in a public place or walking down the street. There has never been compelling evidence of it captured on camera, whether that be through CCTV or recorded on a device. It is always something that occurs when a person is alone and near an ignition source. Not to mention that, biologically, we are similar to many mammals around the globe. And if this were a genuine phenomenon, we would see it happening in at least one other animal. Overall, regardless if we accept the scientific understanding or if we venture closer to the more otherworldly notions, there is no denying that the mystery around spontaneous human combustion will continue to fascinate people. It perfectly blends the fear of a sudden death with the morbid imagery that it evokes, mixing the horrors of what we know and what we are still yet to understand.
Urban Legends is researched, written, and produced by Luke Mordew. Original score by Billy Jupp, with additional sounds from storyblocks.com. If you like what you heard and want to hear more, click subscribe on your chosen podcast provider and delve into the mysteries of our previous and future chapters. To find more, including merchandise, video content, images, and more, visit urbanlegendsfolklore.com. If you have more information or a correction on something mentioned in this chapter, please get in touch through our website. We aim to ensure that all information provided is accurate and up to date, and this remains a top priority. If you want to support the show, receive early access, and have more of a say in what we do, then become a patron by clicking the link in our show notes. For these chapters in video format, simply search Urban Legends Folklore on YouTube. Follow us on TikTok, Instagram, and Threads. And join our Facebook group by searching Urban Legends Folklore.